Welcome to Lunchtime Classics on Classical 90.5, broadcasting live from our performance studio in downtown Louisville.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to Lunchtime Classics. I'm Carol Larson, with a little frog in my throat, I should say. And we are live here in our performance studio featuring the Kentucky Opera performing excerpts of Tchaikovsky's final opera, Iolante. And here now to introduce the music, the performers, and to talk about the upcoming concert performance of this wonderful work is General Director of the Kentucky Opera, David Roth. David?
Thank you, Carol. Great to be here. And I think there are a lot of frogs in the throats these days. So we have a little bit of a different program. One of our studio artists was sick today as well. And I'm a little bit sick myself. So if you can bear with me, I think we'll make it through just fine. We want to give a special thanks to our studio audience for joining us today and those in the audience out there in the airwaves listening to us. As we begin Kentucky Opera's live broadcast of this Lunch and Listen program, it's our partnership program with Louisville Public Media, Classical 90.5's Lunchtime Classics, and Metro TV. Lunch and Listen is our opportunity to introduce our community and our audience to each of our operas by introducing our artists and the story and composition from the different operas as well. Before we begin, I would like to acknowledge our sponsors for supporting a great season of Kentucky Opera and the Louisville Orchestra, which is our partner organization in this concert performance of Tchaikovsky's Iolanta. We want to thank our season sponsor, the Brown-Forman Corporation, production sponsors, Hilliard Lyons, Stockyards Bank, Greenbaum Dahl & McDonald, Atlas Brown, Hard Scuffle Incorporated, and GE. And finally, we want to thank the Galt House, Metro Louisville, Kentucky Arts Council, and as member organizations, both the Kentucky Opera and Louisville Orchestra, we want to thank the Fund for the Arts. When you give to the fund, your support is stupendous. So please join me in a round of applause and support for these great sponsors. Thank you very much. Now, on Saturday, March 21st at 8 p.m., Kentucky Opera and the Louisville Orchestra join forces to present a concert performance of Tchaikovsky's opera, Iolanta. Now, like Samson and Delilah last season, the orchestra and chorus will perform on stage at Whitney Hall with our visiting guest artists, all led by Louisville Orchestra's music director, George Mester. While this is a different setup than our fully staged Brown-Forman fall season operas, it gives us an opportunity to explore rare or seldom performed classics, operas that are new to our audiences. 2 years ago, as we began to explore this idea of producing Iolanta, we quickly discovered how rare this work is. While quite popular in its native Russia, it is hardly known in the U.S., and finding orchestra parts for this particular concert became quite a problem, as we soon discovered there was only one set of orchestra parts in the United States to be rented. But that's not to say that this rich score doesn't deserve to be heard. And that's what we are attempting to do today, what we want you to discover with us, this truly great gift that Tchaikovsky has given us late in his career. Now, Iolanta was commissioned by the Imperial Theater as a companion piece to Tchaikovsky's beloved holiday treasure, the Nutcracker Ballet. It was to be performed as a one-act opera after following the ballet. Based on the popular Danish play King René's Daughter by Heinrich Hertz, Iolanta was to become Tchaikovsky's final opera, premiering in December 1892 in St. Petersburg, Russia. He passed away the following year in 1893. Work began on Iolanta in late June 1892, not at the beginning of the opera, but at the end, with the climactic love scene between the blind Iolanta and her new suitor, Vaudemo, so passionately moved by her innocence and beauty. This is the very emotional heart of the story and seemed to capture the imagination of Tchaikovsky. With his brother Modest supplying the libretto, Tchaikovsky finished the opera rather quickly, completing the full orchestral score just 6 months later, in November 1892. We'll have an opportunity of hearing pieces of this score throughout the afternoon, throughout this program. But first, I want to turn our attention to some of the artists that we have with us. We'll be doing a slightly different form, as I mentioned today, than we have heard in the past with this Lunch and Listen program. We're going to utilize a combination of things to illustrate for our listeners the compositional style of Tchaikovsky. Because this is a co-production with the Louisville Orchestra, we're delighted to have with us today in the studio members of the Louisville Orchestra. Over here to my right, we have Michael Davis, the concertmaster of the Louisville Orchestra. We have Karen Lord Powell, principal second violinist. Jack Griffin is principal violist. And Susanna Onwood, principal cellist. As well as on the piano, we have our music director of our studio artist program of Kentucky Opera, Noko Sugo. So let's welcome all of these guest artists. I also have with me, behind me here in this studio, a couple more representatives from the Louisville Orchestra. We have the principal flautist, Kathy Carr, who's going to join me later in the program to talk a little bit about Tchaikovsky. Thank you for joining us, Kathy. And we also have the chief operating officer, Rob Berman, from the Louisville Orchestra as well. And we have two of our studio artists, Heather Phillips, our soprano, and Benjamin Robinson, our tenor, who have joined us this afternoon, and they'll be singing several selections from the opera as well. So welcome to all of you as well. Thank you for joining us. Now, to introduce what we are dealing with in this composition, we know that Iolanta, the story takes place in the 15th century in the mountains of southern France at the estate of King René. The introduction of the work, a small overture, if you will, is intensely chromatic, as Tchaikovsky is working to evoke Iolanta's world of darkness, the world that this blind child is experiencing, never knowing sight. Here to play for us this introduction, Noko Sugo at the piano, and again, this is the overture or introduction to Iolanta. Noko? Thank you, Naoko. Well, as we hear in this piece, Tchaikovsky is evoking this world, as I said earlier, the dark world that he perceives of Iolanta. And he certainly is evoking some dark, almost tragic story, if you will, something foreboding, which is interesting. Overtures often establish the emotional appeal of a particular composition. They might set the stage, if you will, of a particular production, unlike overtures in the early Baroque period, where they were simply in orchestral form to get the audience to quiet down and get them into their seats before you actually start the drama. By the 19th century, overtures had been established to sort of set the tone, if you will, for the composition to follow. In this particular case, we hear that, with the exception that Tchaikovsky takes his opera in an entirely different direction. And we'll get into a little bit of that later in the program and talk about this piece relative to a lot of his other forms. But first, I would like to invite to the microphone Kathy Carr, just to put this piece into context. What else was going on in this period of 1893, the late 19th century? So, Kathy, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here. I know neither one of us are academicians here, but I think we both have some emotional responses and emotional connections to music. And I wanted to give our audience a little bit of an idea of what was happening at this time. Certainly in 1893, this was late in Tchaikovsky's period, 1892 when this piece premiered in December, and then he passed away in 1893, just at the early age of 53. It might have been older then, but I would like to think of that as a young age right now for a composer. Also, working on compositions at that time, you had Puccini composing his first great operas. Of course, Puccini was much younger, and this was the beginning of his career with Manon Lescaut in 1893 and La Bohème in 1896. Earlier this year, we heard some works in our Brown Forman 2008 fall season. We had Verdi's Otello composed and premiered in 1887, and his final opera, Falstaff, premiered in 1893. Also, at the end of his career, the end that really spanned the entire 19th century. And then you had Werther, the final piece that we performed in our Brown Forman fall season, Massenet's work that premiered in 1892. So these compositions, they show the multitude of range and compositional style that was going on. Some composers late in their period, other composers just beginning and kicking off a new, almost 20th century compositional style.
Right. And what I wanted to talk about, too, was what was happening in Russia at the time, specifically the what is referred to as the Russian Five, which includes Mussorgsky, Rimsky-Korsakov, and Borodin, for example. Mm-hmm. And their aim was to produce a specifically Russian sound in their music, incorporating a lot of Russian folk songs and sounds of Russian life, such as church bells, and also using things like the whole tone scale and a pentatonic scale, and Eastern melodies, so mm-hmm. that they really wanted to produce this whole nationalistic Russian sound, whereas Tchaikovsky believed that his professionalism was in not only combining those folk songs in not to be separated from the Big Five, but he shared their ideals with an emphasis on nationalism. But his link was to set the standard to satisfy the Western European audiences.
Right.
And so his goal and aim was to produce music that for more of a broad international.
Now, because like them, that nationalistic style, he found himself very much a Russian, but he was educated in the West, so he was very much familiar with and developed then the Western style of music, but still believed himself to be a true Russian.
Right, right.
And with that group of five, developed this nationalistic sort of Russian style
exactly.
as well. That later, and there were three composers in the 20th century that really set the style for Russian 20th century music. You have Stravinsky, you have Shostakovich, coming in there. All of those beginning at this time, Prokofiev as well, establishing a 20th century style of music, where Tchaikovsky very much relates to the 19th century, this very romantic style. And while he is using forms that were developed in the Romantic period, the 19th century period, he is also moving it forward by taking the Group of Five and developing a nationalistic style. What we heard in the introduction, some of the chromaticism, those themes that you alluded to, the Eastern themes bringing into his composition.
Right, right.
Great. Well, thank you, Kathy. We appreciate the context around Tchaikovsky at this time. It was a very dynamic period and, if you will, a very transitional period, leaving the romanticism of the 19th century behind and moving forward into the 20th century. And here we have a piece mired in this transition, but very much a piece of romanticism, pure romanticism. And as I said, we'll hear a little bit more of this as well later on in the program. Now, I want to move forward a little bit here. Let's hear a piece of the symphonic beauty of this opera. After the chromatic introduction, we hear this theme, and it's developed in his scene in Arioso, and it's brought through in a trio that we hear at the beginning. Now, we won't have the trio here, but we have a quartet of musicians from the Louisville Orchestra, Michael Davis that I introduced before, Karen, Lord Powell, Jack Griffin, and Susan Onwood, as well as Naoko Sugo on the piano, and they're going to play for us this beginning, the scene in Arioso, which introduces the scene when we first see Iolanta. Wow, thank you all. How beautiful that is, and what a sharp contrast that is between the introduction we heard earlier and he sets it off and goes right into this beautiful, elegant piece, really emphasizing the sweetness and the innocence, if not the beauty of Iolanta, that changes the whole story, which we'll learn about later on in the program. So I know we have a rehearsal that you have to go off to. Thank you all for joining us. So we'll let the members of the orchestra leave us right now. And as long as we're on the subject of the orchestra, I would like to invite to the microphone now Rob Berman, the Chief Operating Officer. Rob, thank you for joining us. This is, as we said earlier, a co-production between the orchestra and the opera. You are relatively new to the area.
That's right, David. Thank you for having us here today. I just moved here with my wife from San Francisco to work with the Louisville Orchestra, and it's been such a pleasure to be part of this community.
What brought you here? You were working in with an orchestra, an organization in San Francisco.
I was. In fact, I was working for a very rarefied part of the orchestral industry. I was working for a period instrument Baroque orchestra in San Francisco called Philharmonia Baroque Orchestra. We did, in fact, fully staged Handel operas in Germany with period sets and period costumes and period staging and gesture and everything else. What's so fun about being part of the Iolanta project for me is hearing the obvious transitions in time from Handel's day to what Tchaikovsky is doing to what emerged in the 20th century. But I came to Louisville because I had an opportunity to meet Brad Broeker, the CEO of the orchestra, in Denver last June. And when he started to tell me the story and the challenges of the Louisville Orchestra, I was completely captivated and knew I wanted to be here to be part of the future.
When did you join the orchestra?
I just arrived here October 9th, 2009.
Oh, wonderful.
2008.
We're not quite there yet in 2009, but we'll get there eventually.
It's just been 6 months.
I'm sure a six-month period of Sturm und Drang, many changes going on. We've had a tremendous change in the economy, but we have many things to look forward to, not the least of which is this concert, of course, as well. Where were you before San Francisco?
Well, I've been all over the country. I was raised in Philadelphia, and I've managed orchestras in Colorado, Iowa, Massachusetts, Florida, and California prior to coming to Kentucky.
And you have a former colleague that lives not too far from us in Owensboro.
I do. My first professional job was executive director of the Dubuque Symphony in Iowa. And those of you listening in the Owensboro region will know that Nicholas Palmer, the conductor in Owensboro, is the former music director in Dubuque. So he has Kentucky ties, and coming here was a nice change for me in terms of rekindling that relationship with Nick.
Well, and we had the good fortune, I had the personal good fortune of meeting Nick Palmer just last month. And out of that meeting that you put together, you introduced us, came a project that we are working on next year. The Kentucky Opera will be taking the studio artists and doing a concert performance of Madame Butterfly with the Owensboro Symphony. So connections all around.
It all feeds each other.
It does indeed. And I would also like to ask you a little bit about your perception right now of Iolanta. I know this is a new piece, as it is for all of us, but you have been listening to it a little bit. Maybe you have some experience with Tchaikovsky in your past.
Sure.
Just a little bit of your personal interpretation
Sure.
of Iolanta.
I think it's so important for everybody to try new things. So I have a saying that I believe in, which is people don't necessarily know what they like. People like what they know. And one of the charges of the orchestra and the opera is to introduce new works to audiences, just the way you would at an art museum or any other arts organization. What makes my job so enjoyable is the opportunity to discover new repertoire. So we all know Sleeping Beauty and Tchaikovsky's symphonies and various other works. What's fascinating to me is to listen to Iolanta, knowing that this came 2 years after Sleeping Beauty and a year before Nutcracker, in the prime of his ballet work, which we all know and love. And again, for me, when I listen to it, I'm just astounded by the incredible architecture and the beauty of the tonality, the duets and various arias that you'll hear more of in a minute. But also, as I said, to make the link in time mentally with what preceded Tchaikovsky.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, of course, based on my past position, the Handel operas were the pinnacle of exquisite beauty for me. And there's a lot of Handel in this Tchaikovsky opera. And what makes me chuckle when I listen to it is when you get to the cadences in the opera, it's pure Tchaikovsky. And I think you'll experience that when you hear the performance.
Well, thank you, Rob, for joining us, and thank you for your insight as well. Glad to have you with us. So now, back to the story just a little bit here. Iolanta has been blind from birth, yet knows nothing of her disability. Wanting to protect her from the harshness of the outside world, her father, King René, has hidden her away with only himself, her old nurse, friends, and a few servants as companions. He has forbidden all to discuss sight and light when around Iolanta, so she will never know that she is different. Iolanta senses that something is lacking in her world. She tells her nursemaid Martha, "Why? Why until now have I not shed tears, not known feelings of longing or sorrow? And why were my days all spent amid roses and sweet sounds of heaven?" I'm very pleased to welcome to the microphone one of our studio artists, Heather Phillips, to perform Iolanta's first aria, "Why Before I Did Not Know Sorrow." And I won't attempt the Russian. I'll leave that to the experts. So, Heather, thank you for joining us. And again, Iolanta's first aria.
Чего это прежде не знала, ни тоски, ни гора, ни слез. И си дни протекали бывало среди звуков.
Thank you, Heather. Beautiful rendition. What a powerful piece, and what a powerful opening into the soul of this blind girl, this beautiful blind girl, the innocence of her passion. I would like to invite back Kathy Carr to the microphone. We want to discuss a little bit about Tchaikovsky's compositional style, especially late Tchaikovsky, if you will. I'm not myself really familiar with the Louisville Orchestra's schedule, but the last time Kentucky Opera performed one of Tchaikovsky's pieces was in the fall of 2005. It was Evgeny Onyegin. Did you perform in that?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. Yes.
Yes, it was a few years ago.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
A lot of water under the bridge.
A lot of music since then, yes.
How do you compare this, his orchestral writing, say, in his operas to some other orchestral symphonic compositions that he has had? And I believe the orchestra just recently did a piece.
We did. The Louisville Orchestra performs Tchaikovsky's music quite a bit because, of course, obviously it's appealing to the audience as well as the musicians and always challenging. So naturally we perform the Nutcracker about 12 or 13 times mm-hmm. in December, but most recently we performed his second symphony, The Little Russian, on our last Masterworks concert with Jason Weinberger conducting, and that's a symphony not as performed as much as the big three, 4, 5, and 6, so that was a pleasure and an honor to do. And then we also performed side by side with our Louisville Youth Orchestra recently. We did the first piano concerto with an amazing soloist, young soloist from China, and that was with George Mester conducting. And then we also played Tchaikovsky's Capriccio Italian as well as the Eugene Onegin's waltzes with our youth, and so that was wonderful. And like I said, his music is always so rewarding and challenging to perform because we're always so busy, and you have to be in great shape to be able to play. It's very athletic. So I like to say that I am an athlete of the small muscles, so I have to be well-toned and in good shape always, especially when I'm playing Tchaikovsky, because you're busy from beginning to end.
And it's interesting. I don't mean to interrupt, but I do have a little quote, which I think ties into that. Shostakovich once was quoted as saying, "To listen to a work by Tchaikovsky is equivalent to a lesson in instrumentation." And he probably does stretch every single player in the orchestra.
Absolutely, which is why it's so wonderful to play as well as to listen to. But his music is so well-crafted and so colorfully orchestrated, that and his sweeping melodies just mean you have to have such great breath control and the dynamic contrast. This is the only composer I can think of that goes from four pianos to four fortes in just, you know, a matter of a few measures. So you have to have that much control.
And he is a man of contrast, and I think that's right, mm-hmm. that you find so many contrasting elements in his compositions, in Iolanta in particular, from, as we just pointed out, the introduction to this very sublime opening scene that the orchestra members played so beautifully. And he also is a contrast in what was going on in that period compositionally, from the romantic style of the mid-19th century and moving forward into this very nationalistic style, developing in a Russian sort of sound, if you will, but then still in terms of his symphonic music, very much based in that German sort of symphonic style, if you will. Is
yes.
that not true?
It is. And, you know, for instance, the bass instruments, the use of the bass instruments is very dark melodies, very romantic melodies. And, of course, in contrast, you have the fleeting, the strings and the upper winds just with their technical passages. So you have all that.
Sure.
Sturmandrang, as you mentioned earlier.
Well, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Tchaikovsky and this opera relative to some of the ballets, in particular the Nutcracker, which was the companion piece of Iolanta. So thank you, Kathy. I appreciate you being here once again. Iolanta, going on with the story, is lulled to sleep by her companions in a most sublime trio. King René, Iolanta's father, arrives with the Moorish physician Ibn Hakia, who will attempt to cure Iolanta's blindness. After he is led away to examine the sleeping Iolanta, King René prays for his daughter's recovery. And we would like to play now just an excerpt of a recording from the Kirov Opera and Orchestra of the Mariinsky Theater in St. Petersburg, with Valery Gergiev conducting and Sergei Alexashkin, if I'm sorry to pronounce that name incorrectly, but my Russian isn't as good as it once was. But we want to give you an example of the bass voice and the bass voice as an instrument that was so integral into all of Russian composition. So here is King René's aria in English, "O Lord, look on me with pity." Very nice, thank you. And again, that was the Kirov Opera and Orchestra of the Mariinsky Theater, with Valery Gergiev conducting and Sergei Alexashkin performing the role of King René, the bass role in this opera. Now, enter the love interest, Duke Robert and Count Vodimo, two hunters, two friends. They're lost. They're lost, and rather fortuitously, they end up in the garden of King René, unaware of where they are or that Iolanta is sleeping nearby. Robert has come to ask to be released from his engagement to Iolanta. He has fallen in love with the very beautiful, if not totally seductive, Countess Mathilde of Lorraine. I would like to play one more excerpt for you, for our audience here. This is, again, the Kirov Opera and Orchestra for the Mariinsky Theater. This is one of the most popular arias from this opera, very well-known aria. And this is the Duke Robert's aria from this recording. And performing it is Dmitry Horovstovsky.
С Матильдой моей, сверкающей искрами черных очей, как на небе звезды осенних ночей.
Oh, thank you. Yes, that is definitely a man that has been smitten by love. Again, that is the Duke Robert speaking of his love for his newfound interest, the Countess Mathilde. Now, I should also state, Iolanta is betrothed to the Duke Robert of Burgundy. The king, King René, her father, has not told the duke of her blindness, as he is hoping that she will be cured. So when the Duke Robert and the Count Vodimo are lost and happen into this garden and see the sleeping Iolanta, they do not know she is Iolanta. They do not know who this woman is. And they do not know at this time Iolanta is blind. This is all news to them. So this is something that is important, as we discover later on in the opera. I would like to bring now Kathy Carr back. I want to talk just a little bit about this companion piece, The Nutcracker, which Iolanta was originally composed to be the second of the evening's course, if you will. We start off with this wonderful ballet, The Nutcracker, which we are all familiar with, and then we would have about a 90-minute entertainment called Iolanta, the opera. So you're very familiar with The Nutcracker.
Very.
Played it many, many times.
Probably about 300.
Do you still use the score when you play it?
There are some that don't, but I still do.
Wise choice, I'm sure.
Yes.
And now, have you had a chance to look a little bit at the score of Iolanta?
No, we have not yet. But, of course, we still have several concerts between now and then, but we will be receiving our music very soon and studying that incredibly a lot.
How would you compare, say, the score of Nutcracker to some of his symphonic works?
Well, certainly Tchaikovsky's genius is that his melodies is melodic, because I start singing excerpts from the Nutcracker around September, way long before the mall starts playing the music. I think that the colorful orchestration, the melodies, it's just such a delight. And so there's nothing like that. His genius is that it's so listenable and
absolutely, and you know, they're accessible. He's one of those composers that crosses the realm of compositional styles. From his symphonic works, his piano concertos, he has ballets that are still the top of the repertoire for ballets, from Sleeping Beauty to, of course, the Nutcracker, and his operas, from Evgeny Onyegin, the Queen of Spades, and then, of course, Iolanta Mazeppa is another of his arias. There isn't much that he didn't attempt to compose.
Well, and the ballets certainly are very symphonic, and that's why we can take music from them and play them on the concert series all the time. So
right.
It's so colorful.
Well, and he has this, I guess, interesting emotional passion and pathos in his work. Yes, he was a romanticist, but he takes it a bit further, and he talks about fate a lot, and this dark cloud of fate, this dark sword of Damocles, can't speak today, that is hanging over him in his work, the shadow that constantly lingers of fate leading him forward. And that actually comes through very much in his characters. When you think of his characters in Onyegin, even the Queen of Spades and Pushkin, it's different in Iolanta, because Iolanta is the one happy ending that he composed. He is not very versed, I guess, in composing something with a happy ending, with a resolution, if you will. Typically, there is still this dark cloud of grayness that is ending the composition, ending the style, and something unknown, something forbidding when he typically ends his compositions. But in this particular case, there's real resolution to it. Do you find that different in some of his symphonic work?
No, I think that is actually really well said, in that there's always that just that passion that seems unresolved. And
yes.
And that's what, one of the things we always want to be sure that we get to the audience when we're playing those, that melody. So, you know, stylistically, we want lots
sure.
of vibrato, so to show that real passion.
Well, thank you, Kathy, for joining us today, giving us some insight into this great man and this great composer, Tchaikovsky. I would like to invite our next studio artist, Benjamin Robinson, here to the microphone. As I said earlier, we have two gentlemen dropping into the garden of King René, the two hunters out lost. We just heard a selection from this recording of the Duc Robert's aria. Immediately following is an air by the Count Vaudemont, and here to sing this, "No, the charming attentions of a spirited beauty tempt me not," translated in English, is Ben Robinson singing Count Vaudemont's aria.
Нет, чари ласкра симя чежнай, мне ничего не говорят, во мне не будет страсти нежной, призыва к ней, которой взгляд. Нет, погружена в покой полночный, любовь во мне. Красоти, твор молим благостини, девус ингас прабрати, поеселенье не низлоха, нега вечне возведле, чиш лан ниша лесного, чиш
So there, as these two men fall into the garden, you have the two contrasts of, I guess women would say, man. You have the one man who is very much interested in the physical beauty of a woman, and the other man who is very much interested into the angelic beauty, the inner beauty of a woman, the kindness, the innocence of that woman. Suddenly, Vadimo sees the sleeping Iolanta. So he sings this beautiful aria, and there off to the side is Iolanta. And he believes that his prayer that he has just sung about has been answered. Robert, again, not knowing that this is Iolanta, thinks that it's an enchantment, urges Vadimo to leave, and remember, neither knows who she is. Iolanta awakens at the unfamiliar voices and meets the two. She rushes off to bring in some wine. Robert leaves, promising to return to save Vadimo from this trap. When Iolanta returns with the wine, Vadimo confesses that it was he who woke her from her sleep and that she is heaven's angel on earth. So to give us just a little piece of this duet, the cornerstone of this opera, I would like to invite back to the microphone Heather Phillips and Ben Robinson to perform You Appear as a Vision of Heaven to Me. Now, just before they sing, I would like to remind our listening audience that this is Lunch and Listen with the Kentucky Opera. This is our co-production with the Louisville Orchestra for Iolanta, our co-production concert opera. This one performance is at 8 p.m. on March 21st in Whitney Hall at the Kentucky Center. To buy tickets, you may call 502-584-7777 or 1-800-690-9236. You may also reach us on our website at www.kyopera.org for additional information about this concert, as well as information on our Brown-Forman 2009 fall season. And I would like to also mention the Louisville Orchestra website, Rob. LouisvilleOrchestra.org, www.LouisvilleOrchestra.org. We want to thank the Brown-Forman Corporation, Hilliard Lyons, Stockyards Bank, Greenbaum, Dahl, McDonald, GE, and Atlas Brown. We want to thank the Galt House, Metro Louisville, Kentucky Arts Council, and the Fund for the Arts. And with the orchestra, we also want to thank Hardscuffle Incorporated for all of their sponsorships. And a special thanks to our audience, Public Radio Partnership, and Classical 90.5. We're delighted to have all of you here today and joining us for this special afternoon of music from Tchaikovsky's Iolanta. So here are Heather and Ben singing this duet, as I said, the cornerstone of the opera Iolanta. You appear as a vision of heaven to me. Thank you.
Цвітіння небесної чистої красоти, як призрак взгляда сної мечі, як облік чистий внах навіки.
Thank you. That again was our studio artist, Heather and Ben, and also Noko Sugo. Thank you very much on the piano. That was the duet, the beginning of that duet with Vodimo and Iolanta when they meet for the first time. Vodimo asks Iolanta to give him a rose to remember their meeting, but Iolanta picks up a white rose. He asks again for red, and Iolanta makes the same mistake two more times, giving him white instead of red. Vodimo realizes that Iolanta is blind and that she is unaware of her condition. Full of pity and love, Vodimo tells her of the beauty of nature and the gift of light. The king, along with the rest of the court, enters the garden where he learns that Vodimo has revealed the carefully guarded secret to Iolanta, and immediately sentences Vodimo to death unless Iolanta's blindness is cured. Iolanta pleads mercy for Vodimo and agrees to being treated by Ibn Hakia, even in the hopes that her eyesight will be restored. After Iolanta leaves, King René apologizes to Vodimo, explaining that he hopes to awaken Iolanta's desire to see and that Vodimo is free to go. Vodimo instead asks for Iolanta's hand in marriage, a request that René must deny as she is already betrothed to Duke Robert. Robert, though, along with his retinue, has returned to save Vodimo. Vodimo encourages Robert to tell King René of his love for Mathilde. The king is moved and releases Robert from his vows. King René then promises Iolanta's hand to Vodimo. Iolanta returns to the garden to see the world around her, including her father and the knight that gave her the love and the light, her sight. So, to end this program, we would like to close it with the finale from the recording from the Kirov Opera and Orchestra, just to show you the beautiful and sort of epic resolution to this wonderful opera and the happy ending when all is resolved. And if we could, one last time, this recording with Gergiev, Valery Gergiev conducting. Brilliant. Thank you. And all lives happily ever after. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, David Roth. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today in this Lunchtime Classics live performance featuring the Kentucky Opera and excerpts from Tchaikovsky's final opera, Iolante. P. Vincent Nevitt, thank you as being the house sound engineer today. Andrew High was the broadcast audio engineer. I'm Carol Larson, and good afternoon.